Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to another Microsoft Learn Live series. For anyone just joining us for the first time, a big welcome. For those coming back, welcome back as well. So Microsoft Learn Live is a series of guided courses designed to increase your knowledge of Azure and to do it in a way where hopefully you can take what you learn here and you can apply it to your own projects as well. So we are your hosts for today's session. My name's Kim Philpotts. Over here is my good friend, Glenn Stevens. Glenn, why don't you go ahead, introduce yourself, and I'll bring up some details for you.
Cool, thanks, Kim. Hi, everyone. Welcome back if you're coming back. Good to see you if it's your first time. My name is Glenn Stevens. I'm a senior content developer here at Microsoft Learn Live. I basically write some content for the Microsoft Learn Live team and deliver it like you're seeing now. I've been a developer for a long time. I like building things. That's my mantra. I just like making stuff. It's what I do. Websites, mobile apps, anything really. You can find me on Twitter at Glenn T. Stevens, where that's most of my tech feed, and my GitHub repository is Glenn Stevens. That's probably enough about me. Kim, do you want to do the honors as well?
Yeah, so let me introduce myself. I'm Kim Philpotts. I'm also a senior content developer at Microsoft, working on the Learn team with Glenn and with a whole bunch of instructional designers and, you know, amazing people who work together to bring you this content. I'm also come from a development background, so I've been a developer for many, many years and, love playing around with Azure as well. So that's kind of, a little bit about me, but we also have some other people on the line as well, Glenn. We've got our moderators as well. So we've got Rob Gibbons and we've also got Matt Calder as well. And they're going to be here to answer any questions you pop into the chat window. And of course, we're going to try and answer some as well. Rob and Matt, I should just say hi in the chat window. And of course, thanks to everyone who's joining us. So feel free to ask your questions. We're live, aren't we, Glenn?
We are. We're very live. We might make mistakes and you'll see them and then we'll correct them and we'll learn from them as well. That's how live it's going to get. Ask your questions, send them through. That's what we love. So if anyone has any questions, feel free to post them in the chat window. Rob and Matt will be checking on the chat window. Kim and I will be looking at it as well. Rob and Matt's going to try and handle any overflow that we get. And we're going to try and get through as many questions as possible. That's probably the live and interactive. I even feel like I'm stumbling over that, Kim.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll stumble over some code today. So I'm really looking forward to today's session because we're actually going to write some code today, which is, coming from a developer background, that's very, very exciting for me. But before we get into that, let's just quickly talk about a bit of a recap, I suppose, for people who are joining us on what our solution is that we're working on and put a little bit of context about where Azure Storage fits into today's solution. So in our scenario, what we are is we're developers working for a company called Van Arsdale. Van Arsdale is actually a fictitious company, but they're in the real estate business. And as part of that, they run a really, really lovely real estate website selling houses. Now, where we started off with is Van Arsdale had their solution on-premises. So it was built using ASP.NET Core. It's using a SQL Server backend. And to start off with, everything was hosted on-premises, as I said. So on-premises service, very manual build and deploy in there as well. So what we did through the various sessions, if you haven't joined us, or just as a recap of what we did, the very first thing that we did is we went ahead and we moved that website from an on-premises server, and we went and put it into an app service in the cloud. And then we took the database, we migrated that database across to Azure SQL. The cool thing about all of that stuff, Glenn, is we didn't have to make any code changes, which is pretty cool. A little bit sad as us for developers not making code changes, but still, it was good for Van Arsdale. Now, speaking of developers, what we also did in our last session is we went and got automated deployments working. So instead of developers having to publish and, having works on my machine sort of problems, we actually got it so that when code was committed into GitHub, it went and took that code, published it up into our app service as well. So today, Glenn, what are we having a look at?
Well, today, Kim, you're not going to be so sad because we're going to write some code. There's going to be some good code that's writing. Exciting times. For the most part, we haven't needed to do much coding at all, but we're going to actually utilize what we had put in place in the previous session where we automated our builds process. So we're going to get our project one step closer towards completion by giving it a centralized cloud-based data storage mechanism and make the ASP.NET solution communicate with that. There's going to be some flow-on effects for that you'll see in the final episode of our series, but there's a few things we need to cover in today's session. Can you, let me take you through those. We want to identify the benefits of Azure Storage. We want to create and configure an Azure Storage account in order to store blob data. And we also want to migrate our data to blob storage as well. But first, we probably should talk about some of the prerequisites if you want to go through the content with us, or maybe just for your own reference if you want to go through it after it. So there are some requirements that ideally we'd like you to have. You should be familiar with Visual Studio 2019, C# and the basics of ASP.NET Core. And you should also have access to an Azure subscription and know how to navigate and use the portal. Kim, what are the tools we're going to use today?
Yeah, so we've got a few tools we're going to play around with. One of the key tools is going to be Visual Studio. And the important thing to realize with Visual Studio is there's a lot of different versions of Visual Studio, but you can actually use any of these. So you can use Visual Studio 2019 on a PC, which is what I'm using. You can use Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio, and Visual Studio Code, you know, you can do that on what, Mac and Linux and Windows. So all the platforms. If you're on a Mac, maybe you want to use Visual Studio for Mac. I think the important thing is, though, that in order to, if you're going to play around with the code, you'll need to have the .NET Core workload installed. So I think version 2.2 is what we're using, Glenn.
Yeah, that's the one. It's a bit of an older one, but remember, we're actually migrating an old app to the cloud. So we just need to have that one there as well. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it wouldn't be an Azure course if we didn't use our good friend, the portal. So we're going to use that as well. And we're also going to introduce you to a cool little tool called the Azure Storage Explorer. And you can actually download this if you want. I'm going to post a link into the chat window here. Let's see if that will go in there. And let me just put that in the bottom of the screen there. Actually, that's not the one we want. We want to... Let's post that one down there. Okay, so the Storage Explorer. So that's where you can, hopefully you can see a link down below. That's where you can go and get that as well. I should also mention as well, we're going to be dealing with some code, right? So we can go and get the code, or you can go and get the code from aka.ms/vanarsdalrepo. The idea here is if you haven't already been on one of our sessions and you want to go and do this perhaps now or later on, you want to clone that repository and then download it or fork it, then clone it, and then you should be able to build and run that as well. And I might just quickly duck over to that link, the Van Arsdale repo, and I'll just put a quick link down below. Beautiful. All right, so this is the Van Arsdale repo. So this is where all the code lives. Down here in this series overview, if we come into here, this will give you a bit of an overview of the entire series. It'll also have some instructions in preparing for various sessions as well. And in that link there, you'll find some really good resources as well, and just some information about preparing your environment, including if you wanted to use the Learn Sandbox, which is a free sandbox that you can play around with. I think it exists for what, about 4 hours, Glenn?
Yeah, roughly. Yep. Pretty close to that.
Yeah, but if you want to, you can come through here, activate the sandbox, and then issue this command, and that should set up your environment ready. And down the bottom, there's also some resources available as well. So we'll discuss some of those as we go through our class today. All right. So just as a reminder as well, you know, if you have any of those questions, don't feel shy. Ask away, and we'll get to them. All right, Glenn, shall we dive into our first objective?
We can, but I just want to call out, Rob put a good question in the chat window, which was, which version of Visual Studio is your favorite? I'd also say which variant as well. It could be Code, Visual Studio for Mac, or Visual Studio 2019. It's a good little question. It's interesting to see the responses.
Yeah, so, I think Visual Studio Code is super popular. I'm a bit of a PC guy, I must admit. So I generally use Visual Studio 2019. So that's normally where I go.
Yeah, I like that. And Visual Studio for Mac for me. It's weird. I'm developing all the platforms, and on Linux, I like Visual Studio Code.
Yeah, you're a bit of a Mac guy, really.
Yeah. I like Windows more these days, I've got to be honest.
All right. Cool. So let's dive into our first objective. So what we want to talk about first of all is we want to identify the benefits of Azure Storage. So first of all, you know, we'll have a bit of a look at our existing solution, how it stores files. And by doing that, we'll have a look at why we want to start using storage and you know, how we can improve our solution. And then we'll take a bit of a deeper dive into what Azure Storage actually is. And it's really a fundamental service, right, that many, many parts of Azure use. And we'll talk about the different variants of Azure Storage as well. And once we've talked about those variants, we'll go ahead and we'll choose an appropriate sort of service for our solution as well. Okay, yeah, so where to now, Glenn?
Well, I think what we should do is look at the deployed solution, what we have. I want to point out a few things, Kim, if you don't mind. Do you mind opening the project in Visual Studio? I'm just running it locally is fine.
Yeah, okay. So here we have our solution. Do you want to spin this up?
Yes, please.
All right, let me do that.
Cool. Just wait for it to pop up. I think you're running multiple monitors, so you have to drag your screen over, right?
I am running multiple monitors, you are right. And it's just popped up popped it up now.
Cool. So we'll wait for the page to load.
Come on, you beautiful thing. Here it is.
Cool. So if you scroll down a little bit, Kim, we can actually see that we've got some listings of properties, and we can do the normal thing and just search and navigate the web page. There's no difference to the project we've been really using in the last session, but this implementation is done by ASP.NET Core using MVC. It's connecting to an Azure SQL Server database. So if you just select on one of the properties, Kim,
sure,
just click on it, we can see some information about that property. And of course, we can see the image for that property as well. So if you right-click an image and look at its address, so you should be able to copy the link address or maybe open it up in a new tab. Just ready to paste that in, and you might have to zoom in order to see it.
Okay, let's have a look over here. Hopefully people can see that.
Yeah, and essentially that image is served from a subfolder called assets. It's really small font there, isn't it? But that folder there is part of our website project, and we can see it in Visual Studio. If we go back to Visual Studio, you'll find assets under the www root folder, I think.
Yeah, let me have a look here. So again, let's sort of zoom in here. I'm wondering if I should go full screen for this, Glenn.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right, so we can see the www root folder. We've got the assets folder here. Yeah, and here's where our property images are.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's right. So Kim, while we're here, it's probably a good idea to walk through how the images actually end up there. So there's a file in the services folder called local file image upload. And if you just open that file and navigate to the store image method.
Okay, so let's have a look here. Cool. Okay, so
just put a breakpoint on that first line of code within that method.
Okay, so put a breakpoint there. Beautiful.
Cool. And essentially that stores the image when an image is uploaded for a new property. So why don't we go back to the website and go through that process? Let's add a property and then add an image for that property as well.
Okay, so I'll duck back over here to the solution. So we want to add a new property, right? So we need to log in first of all using our super secure password.
Oh, it's not super secure. But
all right, so let's go into admin. We'll go ahead, we'll create a new property. Let's make this Kim's house. At the moment, hopefully you can't hear it, but there's a little bit of noise in the background because I'm under construction right at the moment.
Oh, we are live though, aren't we, Kim?
We're live with electricians in the house.
People are working from home at the moment.
I am. So I'm going to hit the save button.
Cool.
Okay, so we've created a new property. Then we want to go and edit. And I'm guessing, Glenn, you want me to go and upload an image here, right?
Yes, please. It doesn't have to be a super image, just any image will do.
Yeah, so I'm going to go and choose a file here. Here's a spooky looking house. Let's go and upload that one.
Cool.
Okay, we're into our breakpoint, Glenn.
That's right. So if you hover over the properties for that, things like the local image path,
Yep.
And you can actually see it's, yeah, or the file. Yeah, you can actually see it's a folder on the local disk system, which is kind of interesting because it means we're storing the images on the app server where the image is uploaded to. And that actually has some consequences. So we want to address that. So let's actually go back and switch to the slides, Kim. And I want to talk about how the images are stored.
All right. Shall I just continue this on?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I'll just continue this and just finish editing our property and hit the save button. Beautiful. So there we are. There's my spooky house. All right. So let's go back to our slides then, Glenn. And let's talk about this approach. So what did you want to discuss here, Glenn?
Well, I wanted to mention that each record in the database has some data about house properties, things like the name, the address, the price, etc. But the database doesn't store any binary data at all. So in our case, binary data like the images. So instead, the database only stores the name or the path of the image. So in the current state of the project, the image files are stored in the file system of the app service that we created in our first session, really. And then the app will use that database information to reference the image file and then create the appropriate HTML image tags and then allow the web page to point to the location of those files. But Kim, do you think we need to change anything? It's working for Van Arsdale. Seems to be a workable solution. The database is good at storing structured data for quick retrieval, and the file system is doing what file systems do, storing files. That feels like it's a solution that works. What do you think could be wrong with it?
Yeah, so I think the question here, Glenn, and this is a question for everyone, I suppose, you know, why should we rethink how and where images are stored, right? So reflecting back on the fact that with Van Arsdale, one of their objectives is to be able to handle scale later on. So that's a big hint, I suppose. You know, and it's actually just pulling it from a particular web server, right? It's pulling it from the assets folder inside of there. So, you know, if we're running on a single server, that's going to be beautiful, right? It's not going to give us any problems. But what happens if we've got multiple servers? You know, that's the question, I suppose. So just see if there's anyone got any input on why they think we should reconsider that. Just pause for a second. Yeah, Rob's said, what do you think? Answer here. So there is a little bit of a delay in the stream. So yeah. We'll wait and we'll see if we have any answers there. A little bit quiet.
It is. I think we need some like elevator music just to fill the gap a little bit, Kim. That'd be a nice little touch.
I could.
You don't have to.
Put a little bit of this on. All right. I think we've got some answers coming through.
Awesome.
Okay. So what Killer, have we got? Killer says databases need to store the metadata separately.
That's true. Anonymous writes scalability, which is very true. Like storage space, absolutely. That's a really good point. The storage space, because disks get full. Like it's not really taking benefit of the cloud if the local hard disk gets full. That's a good point. Can images are slow to retrieve from the file systems? Yeah, good point. So we need a server to store metadata. And stateless says you want to be stateless. I love the fact that the name is like you're just owning that statement there.
It's very meta, very it meta. Is. Yeah. So actually, you know, there's a couple of there that for me anyway, you know, really hit it. Actually, there's the storage space one, right? So that's one I hadn't really thought about too much, but absolutely, that's going to be an issue because they're all sitting on your web server. I think, you know, scalability. Right. So what happens when we run on multiple servers? How's that going to work if it's on the actual web server itself? You know, we have multiple. How's that going to work? And also that idea of statelessness as well. You know, we don't want to be holding state on a server if we can avoid it, because that's going to interfere with our scalability. Rob's put in high availability
for the ha. I actually read that as laughing at the stateless moniker, and then the statement you want to be stateless. But yeah, he's got a point. Does it mean high availability? It certainly could. Anonymous says, can we use the CDN server instead? It will help in case of different web servers behind a load balancer. Yeah, absolutely, we could. But yeah, it's a matter of where you use the CDN from as well. We might actually come back to that particular statement, Anonymous, a little bit later, because it's actually really useful to know.
Yeah. So that's all good. Good answers, great answers, love them. So let's just have a look at the scenario, shall we, Glenn? So at the moment, right, let's say we had our images folder, we had multiple servers here. If we go and upload an image, or, you know, when a user connects to this, they're connecting to essentially one web server, right? If we had multiple scaled out. And if we were to go and upload an image, it'll be stored on that currently connected app services file system, right? So it's going to end up on the server, or, you know, on the app service that we uploaded it to. And we just sort of saw how it actually stored it in the assets folder, right? Now, what's going to happen is, you know, if our users go and connect to a different one, then it's not going to be able to find that image on that app server, right? Because it was actually stored on a different one. So, you know, just what we really want to do here then is we had a centralized database, I suppose, to store information. What we really want to try and do is we want to sort of centralize that information as well, right? Or those images. And one way that we can do that is we can use Azure Storage. So, if we upload our images to Azure Storage, then it's stored in a central location, right? And then when the files are requested from any of the services, they'll have a look at that centralized source of truth for those images in the application. And so therefore the request for the image files won't be out of sync, right? Regardless of which app service actually handles the request, because we're actually going to have a storage account down here as well. Now there's another benefit as well, Glenn. What's the other benefit we have?
Well, I would imagine that it's going to take some load off our app service. So if it's hitting the storage mechanism, it doesn't need to go to our app service. Our app service can then handle more load.
Absolutely. So the request is handled by storage, which is, you know, designed to, like, you know, serve files out very fast. And so we're going to reduce the load most certainly.
So, okay. So Kim, it's probably a good idea as well. Like, we're talking about some of the centralized storage. It's probably a good idea to actually take everyone through what Azure Storage is. We're going to be using it for storing images, and that's a really effective use. But there's actually a lot more that Azure Storage has to offer.
Yeah, and this is one of the things we mentioned earlier on. Azure Storage is like a fundamental service used by lots and lots of different parts of Azure. It provides a scalable, secure, you know, highly available, redundant storage used all over the place, right? So, for example, you know, SQL Server, will store logs there and things like that, if you like, for security. Now, Azure Storage is actually kind of an umbrella term, and it's actually used to divide or describe a number of different storage scenarios. So I've got these on the slide over here. So the first of the storage types, I suppose, is the Azure Blob Storage, which can be used to store, you know, just a large amount of unstructured data, right? Blob, standing for what, binary large object inside of there. So that's what our images are, right?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, the blob storage means anything. It's a large object file. It can be actually really small, or it can be large. It doesn't matter about the size. That part's very variable. So any file you want, image, text file, XML, zip files, you name it. If it's a file, you can put it in there.
Beautiful. The next type we have is table storage, right? So table storage in Azure stores like no SQL data, I suppose, in the cloud. It's kind of like key attribute store. It has a schemaless design. One of the really nice things about this, Glenn, I know you love table storage, is that it's very fast. It's very cost effective. But it does have some limitations, right, when you compare it to other services like Azure SQL Server and Cosmos DB. So you don't want to put everything in there, but it can be very useful, right?
Yeah, under the right circumstances, it's actually a really good benefit. I personally use it for some nonprofits that I do some work with. It's a very cheap mechanism for them, but they don't have the transactional needs of something like SQL Server or Cosmos DB. So it fits in that particular category.
Yeah. The next type of thing that Azure Storage can do is it can have queue storage, right? And that's for sort of storing messages in a queue that can be very useful for decoupling our solution. And that allows it to be more scalable. So this is kind of more like an event-driven architecture, right, that you might use. Yeah. All right, and the last one that we have is we've got file storage, right? So file storage is where we have this sort of fully managed file share within the cloud that's accessible by sort of standard file sharing protocols like SMB or what is it, server message block protocol. So we've got four different types of storage here, Glenn. Which of these would be the right one to replace our current disk-based solution where we're storing things in an assets folder? Where should we go?
Well, I think we can eliminate table storage and queue storage. They're not really meant for storing binary data like our images. And that really just leaves us with blob storage and file storage. And it's actually kind of tempting to pick file storage. You look at it and go, okay, well, we're storing it on a file system. It might be a perfect substitute for what we're doing because our current implementation just uploads files to the web service disk drive. But essentially, we'd have to just save to a different path. But there's actually something you need to know about file storage, Kim, and that's that the file storage is really meant to be used if you've got an environment where you're currently using a shared disk, like a virtual machine, and you want to migrate that environment into the cloud. So looking at our solution for Van Arsdell, we actually are not doing that at all. We've just got one web server and no shared disks. Mm-hmm. But blob storage lets you expose the images in a way that's actually really quite compatible with our website. So while we technically could use file storage, it's not really the recommended option for our situation. Instead, we're going to focus on blob storage. So that's our answer for today. It's going to be blob storage.
Beautiful.
But I guess the challenge is to get blob storage to work as a drop-in replacement for what we currently have.
Yeah, and we've kind of got a fairly elegant way of swapping that in for our current-based file storage, which we saw was the local image storage. So why don't we have a little bit of a look at how that might happen and just make sure that we understand what we're trying to do here. So let me duck over here to our code, Glenn, and I might sort of zoom us in here so we can have a look. So one thing we'll notice here with our local file image upload, we have this store image, which we saw was basically where it takes an image or an image stream, it takes a file name, and then it copies that, in our case, into the assets folder here. Now, if we go up and have a look at this, this is actually something called an iImage upload, or it implements this interface, right? And interfaces are really cool because it means that we have like this contract, and the very smart people at Van Arsdell decided to add that sort of abstraction layer. And what that means is that we should be able to go and implement a different type of iImage uploader, which would, instead of storing it to the file system, would go and put it in our storage account. And so we would basically go and write a new store image that goes and talks to that file system talks to the Azure storage. Okay, so it's currently using this. Now, how does it know to use the local file image upload? And it turns out that if we have a look at our startup, and so those of you familiar with ASP.NET Core will probably be familiar with this idea. You have this startup file, which basically configures everything. And inside of here, if we have a look down here, we can see that there's a little bit of code here. And I'll see if I can zoom this in a bit, right? We have this add singleton here. And this is sort of saying, hey, I'm going to register something for an iImage uploader, and it's the local file image upload, right? So what it's saying is, hey, system, whenever you need an iImage uploader, this is the one that we want to use. Now, if we go and we implement a new one of these, we could register, say, our Azure Blob Storage uploader into our singleton, and it should just go ahead and use that, right? So should we go and create one of these?
Yeah, I think we could, Kim, but let's do our first things first. I think right now what we actually need is an Azure storage account because we'll need to actually communicate with that. So why don't we go back to the portal and actually make one?
All right, let's duck over to our portal. Beautiful. So here we have our portal. Let's go and create a resource, shall we? And maybe you can walk me through this one, Glenn.
Sure. So you clicked on the create a resource button. That's awesome. So the next thing we want to do is select the storage account. I think we've got...
My apologies.
No, that's all right.
Well, actually, there's a few things. Wait a minute. Before we jump into that, Glenn, let's have a look. Let's do an overview of what we want to do, right? Okay. So this is essentially what we want to do. We want to talk about using the portal to set up our account. We're going to configure it. We're also going to write our or we're going to go and explore this with this tool, the Azure Storage Explorer. Okay. But look, let's go ahead back to the portal. That storage. Glenn?
Yeah, so if you scroll down, it's actually in the popular list on the far right. It should be towards the bottom.
Storage account. Here we are. There we go. Bob file table queue.
And of course, you can type storage into the filter to bring it up. But if you click on that one, the storage account queue.
Yeah, I clicked on that one.
There we are.
There we are.
The time today. Nice. So you'll just really need to select your subscription and resource group. So I think, Kim, you've already got a resource group created from the previous project that we've been doing.
I do. I've got my pre-baked resource group.
Cool. So we'll continue to use that one. And then we need to enter a storage account name. And the storage account name actually has some rules associated with it. So we can only use numbers and lowercase characters in the name. And you'll want to select something that's unique, and it will need to be unique across all storage account names because it actually sets up a subdomain on the web.
Okay.
So we couldn't use something like real estate because it's probably conflicting with something that's already taken. So we just need to find a name that's a little bit relevant. So something like maybe Store Van Arsdale Development, something along those lines, Kim.
Let's go. Well, I had pre-baked. Can I put it in there?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that should do us. So Store Van Arsdale pre-baked. What's next? We've got our location, right?
Cool. So we'll select the location. And you want to select a location that's close to your web server. Remember that we chose our web server location because it's close to our customers. And we need to do the same thing there again.
Yep. Beautiful. So I think that's Central US, actually. I think that's where it was. So we can just leave it there. So even though we're in Australia, we don't want to necessarily make the storage really fast for us. We want the storage fast for our customers. So we'll leave that as Central US.
Cool. So up until now, I think most of those settings are actually pretty obvious, but we're going to talk about some of the other settings that are actually not so obvious. So things like performance, account kind, and replication and access tier. So what are those particular properties, Kim? Do you want to take us through that?
Yeah, so let's talk about what these are. So first of all, we've got our performance. We've got standard and we've got premium. So these are just different options in terms of performance. And as always, it's good to have a look, a little bit of a hover over those information buttons or, have a look at those links inside of there. We won't do that at the moment, but basically standard means that we're going to be putting our storage on, old school, if you like, magnetic hard drives, like spinning bits of metal. And with premium, it's going to end up in solid state drives, right? And of course, solid state drives, at the moment are probably a little bit more expensive. So the usage of premium adds a little bit of cost. So we should be aware of that. But what we want to do is we want to think about Van Arsdale and we want to think about what would be the best solution for them. And I think, realistically for performance, we're probably going to be fine with the standard option, right? So of course our SSDs are going to be a little bit faster, but actually hard drives are pretty fast, particularly if you're, reading off sequential files like that. And I don't think this is going to be the bottleneck for our application. I think, the bottleneck for our application is more going to be around network, just purely, people connecting to it, not disk access. So I think standard's going to be fine for us. In our particular case. So we'll stick with standard. Probably the more interesting one is this account kind. So if I drop that list down, you can see that there's a few different versions. There's Blob, there's Storage V1, there's Storage V2 as well. So let's quickly walk through those. Blob Storage, now this is an account type where as the name implies, it's only going to store blobs. And it's actually the oldest version of storage, I suppose. And, you know, we saw that, so it can only store blobs, and we saw that there's actually different types of storage as well. There's queue storage and, you know, file storage and things like that. So blob storage is a little bit limited. Storage V1, this was the first version of the storage account which had those additional features like tables and queues and things like that. And where it differs from V2 is when it comes to cost associated with accessing it. So storage V2 is the most current version, right? It's got all of the features that we might expect. You know, it has a little bit more granular optimization of reads versus write. Version one is perhaps a little bit cheaper when reading, but the cost of allocated disk space a little bit higher. Version two has more options when it comes to redundancy, which we'll have a look at in a moment. Now, of course, that's all great information, and you know, I can see you there, Glenn, saying, "Yeah, that's cool, Kim, but what should we use? You know, what does Microsoft recommend?" Well, look, if you're creating a solution, Microsoft recommends that you use general purpose V2. If you're creating new storage accounts, right? You know, because it's more modern, it's more flexible as well. And so for us, you know, it probably makes a pretty good option as well. So I think we'll stick with V2 inside of there. And then we've got replication. What's replication? Well, we know what replication is, but tell us some of these replication options here, Glenn.
Yeah, replication is kind of interesting. I just noticed though, Kim, we've got a chunk of questions we haven't answered in the chat window. Cool. And I want to make sure that we actually get through as many as we can, if that's all right. There's a question from Anonymous. Which one is cheaper? Are you talking about files or blobs? I think that the Azure cost calculator is actually the go-to point of reference for that. So I'd recommend checking that out and then just running simulations and seeing your costs for what you want. So Weidong Shen has a question for Azure Storage Explorer. When someone signs in using an account with multi-factor authentication and that account has multiple subscriptions, could the Azure Storage Explorer let me sign in by entering password and text message only once? Okay. So if you've got three subscriptions, you have to answer multiple times. I think that's probably a really good point of feedback for the Storage Explorer team. One thing I really enjoy about dealing with the Azure product team in general is if I have a recommendation, I just provide feedback and it may get in, may not, but you've got to make sure you put your comments out there to make the product better. We're always looking at ways to make our products better.
Yeah.
Does Azure compress all that data in the storage account? Rob's answered that. And the cost to store and retrieve files, again, on the cost calculator, it is a good place for that. Anonymous has a question, is file storage S3 storage? Well, it's similar in what it does. You're referring to the Amazon offering, I'm guessing. But yeah, we store files in that particular case. But Azure storage is, or actually is file storage S3 storage? File storage is disk-based storage, where the blob storage is really just binary large objects. Adrian has a comment. Hi Rob, I like both Visual Studio 2019 VS Code. I had 2015 before 2019. Cool.
Well, it's much better.
Yeah, significantly, I would say. Yeah, it's so good. Akila, why V2 is used for blob storage? Well, you can actually use all of those variants. V2 is the recommendation. It has the kind of optimal settings for modern use. The V1, like, there's subtle differences. Check your use cases, because you might find out you might have cost benefits for doing it. There's differences between the various tiers.
Yeah, I've also found, Glenn, that like the NuGet packages that you can use to access them work better with V2 than they do with V1. So
yeah, that's a good point, Kim.
Yeah. So the recommendation is, you know, from the official Microsoft recommendation is if you're creating a new one, just use V2. It's a better option for you.
Cool. So Kim, before we went to the questions, you asked me about replication. So I want to head back there, if that's okay.
Sure. Let me bring the screen up here.
Awesome. So data in our Azure storage account is always replicated just to ensure high availability. So Azure storage copies all our data so that it's protected from planned and unplanned events, including things like transient hardware failures, network or power outages, and massive natural disasters. It's kind of interesting in the current environment, I guess, just thinking about that. So keep that in mind. So the options for replication allow us to choose to replicate our data within the same data center across data centers within the same region or across geographically separated regions. In fact, there's quite a lot of options in there. So you want to have a look at the documentation to see if redundancy is a key consideration for your solution. I must admit, Kim, I love using those info hover points to find out more information or use the help information where I can. Because sometimes the replication options can be a little bit much. And if you don't remember what the zones and regions are, you might want to come back to that, especially when you're early on. That's been my experience.
Yeah.
But
just as a slight detour here, Glenn, we do have a link in here somewhere, which is about the storage redundancy reference here. So if anyone wants to sort of dig into that a bit more, that's a really good option for you as well. Yeah. All right. Sorry, my apologies. Just interrupting there, Glenn. So keep going.
That's all right. Now, because of the importance of the image data, replication in our scenario should be set to at least the zone level or ZRS, which gives us the storage account replication across two separate data centers within the same zone, which I think is a good compromise here. It won't protect Ben Arstall from a regional outage, but if that happens, they'll likely be facing other issues anyway. So that's probably an appropriate choice.
Yeah.
And so that's probably the last one. I think the access tier is the next thing to look at. Kim, would you do the honors on that one?
Yeah, so the access tier. So what we have is we've got essentially two options here, but the idea is with the access tier, we're defining how quickly we want our data to be available. So hot, which is the default, means, you know, we've got frequently accessed data. And if you think about the images in our real estate application, then, you know, they're going to be accessed pretty frequently, right? Every time somebody goes and brings up the website and it shows a list of the properties, then we're going to be requesting that information. So we actually probably want to have hot storage, right? But we also have this cool option as well. And you know, let's say you were storing information mainly for record keeping purposes, right? So you don't want to access it all the time. You want to store it, but you know, you might occasionally do it. In that situation, like a cool access tier, I always call it cold for some reason, but the cool access tier is probably the right choice for that. So basically, cool is going to cost you less money, but it's not going to be as fast serving it up. And you know, again, if we think back to our scenario with Van Arsdell, we want our images to load fast. We don't want delays, and that means hot is probably where we want to be, I think. Okay. So look, why don't I go ahead and hit the create button, Glenn, and we'll get this created.
That's a good idea. David had a good question though in the chat window, Kim, if you don't mind. He said, is there a latency to data replication? And I think the answer for that is going to be yes. You can't not have a latency. It'll need to replicate, but it might store it in the, I'm not sure of the order of things, but yeah, it'll communicate throughout. I think eventual consistency is what they're after. In regards to the way it replicates, it's probably a good idea to check the documentation around that to get the finer details. Because it might be very different within the same region versus a geographically diverse replication process.
Yeah, and I think you know, it's fair to say though, this is, you know, the replication in Azure is very much built to be, you know, super fast as well. So you know, anytime you're replicating data, it will take time, but hopefully not too much. All right, so we're creating some resources here, Glenn. We can see that it's actually creating a storage in here. While we're doing that, Glenn, let's post up a little question here for people to have a think of these, just a little bit of a knowledge check. So which of these is not a type of storage account? Blob storage, file storage, stack storage, or queue storage? So talking of latency, you know, answer in the chat window and we'll come and have a look at these answers.
Cool. And Anand had a question. Can I move my stored file to low cost storage automatically after a certain duration of non-access, or do I need to do it manually? You could probably write something to do that. For me, I would use an Azure function that operates on a timer where I look to move files older than a certain amount of time between a storage account that is using the hot tier to the cool tier. Something like that would work quite well, I think.
Yeah, I'm not aware of anything that will do it automatically. All right, so we can see some answers coming in.
They're all good answers, Kim.
They're good because they're right, Glenn. Yeah. Blob storage, that's a thing. File storage, that's a thing. Stack storage, that's not a thing. All right, and we have queue storage. So that's our four options there. Beautiful. All right, have we got time for another quick question?
I believe so.
All right. Let's say we're working on an accounting system. We're archiving copies of old scan receipts for long-term storage. What sort of access tier might we use for that? Hot, cool, just warm. Again, pop those answers into the chat window.
I did suggest tepid as an answer yesterday, Kim.
You did, but I couldn't spell it, so I didn't put it in.
And that's why I love IntelliSense. It spells all the things right for me.
All right. And while that question's up, I'm just going to quickly duck back, have a look and see whether our deployment's complete. It is. All right. And just back to that, we've got some answers in now. Yeah, so hot, probably not. We don't have to access it very often, right? So probably not hot. Cool, absolutely. Warm. That's not really a type that we have. We have hot and cool. Beautiful. All right, fantastic. So Glenn, we've got, so all good answers in the chat window. We've got our deployment complete here.
Where's cool to answers in the chat room. Absolutely. All right. So you've got our deployment complete there, Kim. What are we going to do next?
Well, I think we should probably go and have a look at this and navigate to the resource and have a look, because we haven't actually specified what type of storage it is yet, have we?
No, that's a good point. We've created the storage account, but we're really focusing on blob storage. So we want to actually look at the containers. So we've been using the term blob storage, but internally it uses the term container. And we should define what a container is as well, because not everyone might be familiar with it, or you might have an alternative definition of it if you're using a technology like Docker, I guess, or Kubernetes. So a container means something different in that world. But here in Azure Storage, a container helps us organize blobs. So one way to think of it is like a folder. A storage account can have as many containers as we need, and each container then contains our data, or more precisely, the images for us in our case.
All right, so this is kind of where we're selecting the type of storage that we have, right? So yeah. As you said, I'll select containers, and it's gonna show me the containers here.
Yeah, so we probably should add one as well, Kim.
All right, so I can come up here, I can hit the plus sign, I can say, hey, let's go and create a container. Yeah. We're gonna store house images in here, so I'll call this house images. Cool. But what about this permission level here?
Yeah, we need to define the permissions for that particular container. We wanna be able to see the images in the browser, but not browse the folder containing all the images. That means the best option for us here today is blob, which says anonymous read access for blobs only. And that allows access to individual files or blobs if you know their name, but you can't really just list the contents of the folder.
Right, so somebody can't just enumerate it from a website, essentially. No.
Yeah, so private means you normally use the API key to manipulate it. Blob means anyone can read it. And then container means anyone can read it and also scan the container for the contents.
Okay, so blob makes sense for us because we're going to want people, if they know the URL of an image, we want them to be able to access that. We don't need, you know, it's a public website showing house images, so we don't need super secure storage on that one. Okay,
yeah, that's right.
So we've got, it's just created that container for us. We've got house images inside of there. If I click on this, what do I get?
Well, there shouldn't be any blobs in there. We've just created it. And in fact, the web-based user interface allows us to upload files. But there's better tools in order to use as well. We mentioned it at the start, the Azure Storage Explorer. But there's also other ones, Kim. Kim, what ones are you using?
Well, like we could use anything, right? Like it turns out that, you know, like Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio 2019, they both have extensions that allow us to do it. But I, you know, when I'm looking at blob storage, I like to, or, you know, file storage, I like to have a look at the Microsoft Azure Storage Explorer. So this, you know, pretty much gives the ability to connect up to a storage server. You know, you can have your Azure account linked up there and you can go and have a look at that information inside of there. So let me open up the Storage Explorer. Okay, so Storage Explorer, you know, everything's looking a bit Visual Studio Code these days. I've got lots of different subscriptions here, but the one that I've actually, I'm actually deploying to is Visual Studio Enterprise. And under Storage Accounts, I've got some Learn Live Storage here. So I probably need to give this a refresh because I already have this loaded up. So I'm going to refresh this and all things going well, there we go. We can see the storage account that we have created here. Okay, and then underneath here, I can see the different types of storage. And if I say blob containers, I can see house images in here. Wonderful. And so if I select that, this is going to list out all of those blobs that I have inside of there. Now, the cool thing here, Glenn, is, and why I like this tool, is because I can just go and upload things from here. And in fact, even cooler, I can go and grab something from my file system and I can just drag and drop it into here. And we can see down here, it's basically going to go and transfer that image up there for me. So it's a really, really nice, easy way of actually moving data. All right, and so so there we can see we have this blob inside of here. In fact, what I can do is if I select that and I say copy URL, that will give me the URL for that selected item, which means if I come across here and I plonk that URL inside of there, and you can see it's Store Van Arsdale. We've got an image there, and I hit that, and it's getting that from storage. So it's a public URL, which is pretty nice, right?
Yeah, it is. And also, if we can use that, it means we won't need to get images from our app service at all.
Yeah, and we're going to reduce the load on our app service.
Cool.
Okay, so Glenn, we now have a place for our images. We know where they're going to be. It's all set up. What we want to do now is we want to dive into our sort of our third objective, right? We want to go and implement this thing. So what we want to do, first of all, is we're going to implement a version of iImage Upload, which uses our Azure Storage. We're going to have to talk about some API keys in order to access our storage. And then we're going to use something called dependency injection, which really is that just that singleton we talked about in the startup, to tell it to, instead of doing things for the local file storage, let's go and stick it up into Azure Storage. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Cool. Yeah, well, Kim, the Azure services expose a REST API that allows connectivity into the Azure service. And now for us, Van Arsdale have an ASP.NET MVC app. So we've conveniently got access to a NuGet package called Microsoft.Azure.Storage.Blob that conveniently wraps the REST API to use from our code. And that's going to give us nice connectivity options to the blob storage within our storage container. And you can guess there's also equivalent NuGet packages for things like table storage and queue storage, as well as the file storage. But we're going to use the blob library to have our images upload into our container within the cloud-based blob storage. And that's kind of going to be pretty nice. But I do think before we jump into it, it's a good idea to remind ourselves of the goal and what we've done so far. Now, we started with the project in a state where it uploaded images directly to the local file system. And now we're going to create an implementation that communicates with Azure Storage over the REST-based APIs. And we're going to make our lives significantly easier by using the Microsoft Azure Storage Blob NuGet package. So Kim, why don't we add this NuGet package into our project? Now, I know you can right click and use the manage NuGet packages, but What about using the .NET add package instead?
Yeah, so you can certainly do that, but not not all of the different versions of Visual Studios that use that. And look, I can be super cool and use the command line. Everyone loves the command line these days, right? So I could say .NET add package. What do we got? Microsoft.Azure.Storage.Blob.
That's it. And that'll download the package, do its thing, and your credibility increases because you're using the command line option there, Kim. That's always nice.
I can feel myself being a better developer already.
You can.
Right. So we've got that in there now. We actually haven't created ourselves a Azure Blob Storage Uploader yet class. So should we go ahead and do that?
We should, absolutely.
So we can see that here, this was in our services. We have our local file image upload. So let's create ourselves a class here. Naming's hard, Glenn. What should I
It
call this
is. Yeah.
thing? I think we should
It's
call it
always a
something.
hard thing. I think we're going to call this Azure Blob Storage Image Upload.
Nice, simple, short name. I love
Well,
it.
for me, I like to be clear, I must admit.
Naming's hard. Naming's hard. So we want this to implement that interface, right? So that was an iImage upload. Okay. So that's going to allow us to make it a drop-in replacement. And get a little red squiggly line that says, hey, you haven't implemented a particular method. Visual Studio is cool. I can say, okay, we'll go and implement this interface for me. And we can then see the storage. And actually, we should, because we haven't actually had a look at this definition of image upload. We can see that there is just one method in it. That's all it needs. It just needs a store image. And here we're creating an implementation of that. Okay, fantastic. All right, Glenn. So we've added this NuGet package in. Let's sort of start putting together some code here. And look, I'm not going to type all this code in because nobody needs to see me type. It's often quite embarrassing. But look, a couple of things that I know that we're going to need, Glenn, is we're going to need some usings inside of here. So I'm going to throw some of those in. Right? So we've got three usings: Microsoft Azure Storage, Storage Auth, and Storage Blob. So I think they're the references we need, Glenn.
Yeah, I don't think it's past that. Storage and auth will be the data types. The blob will have data types and also some extension methods that we'll use too.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Now we're also going to have some variables that we're going to use inside of here. So if we have a look here, things we're going to need, we're going to need the account name, we're going to need an account key, our base URI, and our container name. So we'll talk about those as we go through. Now, what I'm going to do, Glenn, as I mentioned, instead of actually sort of typing all of this out, I'm going to sort of copy and paste inside of here a little bit. Okay. So let's do this step by step, and we'll talk about each step as we go through. So this is the implementation of store image. I might just zoom this in a little bit, see how we go. Okay, we don't want to throw a new implemented exception. Instead, what we want to do, first of all, we want to create a connection to Azure Storage. So Glenn, do you want to just run me through these lines of code?
Sure. Well, the storage credentials are basically how I authenticate to Azure Storage. And Azure Storage has an account name, which is really the name of the service that we created, and also the account key, which is a really long API key, like probably about 80 characters or so. That's very unique to our service, so it'll allow us to authenticate. We then get the storage details about where the location is based. And then we create the cloud storage account, which is really the client to the Azure storage system. And we pass in the credentials and the URL and the other parts of information. One thing I do want to note here, Kim, is that we're doing C# code in this, but this Azure storage is actually available for a lot of different other languages and frameworks. So if you're doing things like Node or Java, you'll actually find the APIs are very similar. So keep in mind and follow along, and then you can apply that knowledge to those languages too.
Fantastic. All right, so we've got a connection. Now the next thing is we want to create a blob client, get access to the container. All right. Is that our next step? I think that's our next step.
That
All right.
is.
Now we've got a little squiggly line here, Glenn. So we're saying, okay, create ourselves a blob client, go and get a reference to the container. We'll get that name in a moment. And then we say, hey, let's go and create it if it doesn't exist. We're trying to be a little bit defensive here, I suppose. And I've got a red squiggly line, and that red squiggly line is because we're awaiting, right?
Yeah, so, you haven't marked the method as async yet.
I need to mark that as async, and then that should go away.
Nice pair programming there, Kim.
Exactly. It's all about the pair programming. Okay, cool. So at this point, we should, you know, have access to a container or create one if it doesn't exist. The next thing is we want to get a blob reference, right? And we need permission. So Glenn, remember where you talked us through the different types of permissions that we had. We had blob, we had container, we had, you know, no access, right?
Yeah.
So we want blob.
We want the blob. And normally you'd only do this the first time the container is created.
Exactly.
But yeah, so that's setting the access levels there. We're setting the permission on the container on line 36. Mm-hmm. And on line 37, we're getting the blob reference. So that's actually just saying, here's where we'll deal with that particular blob file against that particular container. So that blob may not have even been created yet. We use that blob reference to do things like insert, update, or delete operations for that particular file location.
Yeah, fantastic. And look, we've just got one last thing we want to do, right? So we want to upload the image to the blob. And if it already exists, we're going to delete it, right? That's just a business rule that we have. So we say, okay, let's go and get that blob deleted if it exists. Seems reasonable. We're actually setting a file type or a content type here, Glenn.
I notice if you don't do this with our particular images, when you use it in a browser, it might download the image instead of presenting it to the user. So it's ideal to set the content type where it's appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we're sort of getting our image stream, and we're going to upload that. Okay. And once we have that, we're going to return the URL, right? Because that's ultimately what our store image does. It returns the URL of the image, right?
And then that URL gets stored against the record in the database, right?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
Cool.
Okie dokie. So we're in reasonable shape here. Now, look, one thing that we do have to do as well, Glenn, is we have to add a constructor.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of that secret information we need to pass through. So things like the API key, the container name, ideally you want to feed that into the class rather than have it hard-coded.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to I'm gonna pop that into here, into our class. So this is just a constructor, and we'll talk about how this is used in a moment. But we're sort of saying, with this constructor, I'm expecting it to pass in the account name, the account key, the base URI, and the container name. And we're just going to grab those values, and we're going to store them in here, okay? And then they're going to be used down here. Okay, so we basically want to pass that information into there. Okay, so Glenn, where to from here? Where do we get those values for the variables? You know, some of these are secret values, you know, like things like account keys and things like that. So how can we do that in ASP.NET Core?
Well, it's obviously not a good idea to hard code those values into your project, Kim. You certainly want them as configuration settings, but because they're so secret, I would probably use the manage secrets option on the project. So if you right click on the project, you should be able to see that manage secrets.
Yeah, it's about halfway down or so.
Yeah, manage user secrets. There we are. So if you click on that, that'll open up a JSON file, and you can essentially put in some information that you want to store. That's not going to get checked into version control accidentally. And it's just going to give you a nice develop process. Now for us, we just need those four configuration settings that we're passing into the constructor. So I think you've probably got those prepped already, but it's things like the account name, the account key, the base URL, and the container name. But we need to talk about also where those values for those entries come from.
I'm guessing the portal, right?
Yeah, exactly. So things like the account name, well, that's just the account name of the storage service that we created. If we go to the portal, we can just copy that name directly.
Okay, so if I come back to, let's have a look back here, we should see we have our storage accounts, probably just that name right there.
Exactly, that's all it is.
Okay, so let's throw that in.
Cool.
What do we got next? We got the key. This is the one that I'm worried about, Glenn.
Yeah.
Get that.
Well, yeah, when we use the Storage Explorer, Kim, you would have actually logged in with your Azure username and password and probably did a two-factor authentication. But using that method allows us to access all our subscription and not just the storage account that we need. But when you're letting a client out communicate with Azure Storage, you certainly don't want to end up just using your personal account's credentials in there. That gives it too much of a wide access. Yep. So instead, what we use is an access key, which is a really long string that's near impossible to guess. And where you can find that is under the settings, and in particular, the access key. Yeah, you can see that little image of the icon there, the key icon there, Kim.
Beautiful.
So what we get here is not just one key, but two keys. And the idea behind it is we could essentially rotate those keys. So maybe one's been compromised and you just want to replace it with another one. And you can rotate key two, you could start redeploying your app with a new key while apps using key one would continue to work. So it also means you could use any of those two keys to access your storage account.
Okay.
So we'll copy one of the key values there, Kim.
Let's get key one. Yep.
Yeah. And we'll put that back into our configuration for the account key. Nice and along that setting.
Beautiful.
And we've also got some other parameters here as well. So things like the storage base URL, or URL, yeah. So that would be a combination of HTTPS, the account name, .blob.core.windows.net.
That's like a standard, right?
Yeah, if you go back to the browser where you had the image that you were viewing, that you uploaded to Azure Storage, you can actually see the details there. It's really the prefix.
In fact, I should just copy that, shouldn't I? So I don't.
Yeah, that's what I tend to do.
Okay, so let's grab that.
Yep.
Let's see if I can unzoom. There we go.
Yep. We'll paste it back in the configuration.
Paste it back into here. Beautiful. And the container. Look, I know what the container is. It's house images, right?
That's it.
Beautiful.
Cool.
All right, so we've got all of our settings here, but we're not actually putting them into here yet. So we need to actually swap out that implementation now, right?
Yeah, but we're really close, Kim. We've got the class that does the work. Well, we say we're close, but we're developers. We know things sometimes break. so we'll see what we can do here. What we'll do is we'll go back to the startup.c# file in our ASP.NET MVC core project. And if we scroll down to where we're defining the singleton for the iImage upload, you can see we've got on line 87, we're registering the local file image upload. We want to replace that with our new Azure Blob image upload service instead. We'll just comment that out.
I'll comment this puppy out.
Yeah, yep. Just so we can see it as a reference. And then we want to do something very similar. Yep. So we want to add a singleton, and in particular, the iImage upload. And we want to register a new Azure Blob Storage image upload class.
So Azure Blob Storage image upload. Yeah. And then we added that constructor in before, right? We can see it takes the account name, the account key, base URI, and the container name. Right.
Yeah, that's right. So then it's just a matter of supplying the appropriate values.
Right.
So for that, we can use the configuration class.
So I'm going to show you something cool here, Glenn.
Okay.
It's not that cool, but it's sort of cool. What we can do is, you know, they've talked about like 10 times developers.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like a 4 times developer here. I can say configuration.getValue. Right.
So I always like developer productivity tips.
Yeah. The problem I have there actually is I went and I put a lowercase c. So much for that. All right. Configuration.getValue. And what we're doing is this is essentially saying, hey, let's go and get a value from those settings that we set earlier on, right?
Cool.
So we got a few of these, right? We want to pass in the first one, and I'm going to copy these from here because I'm terrible at making typos. We're basically getting these keys, and we're saying the first thing we need is the account name. The second thing we need is the account key. That's our second parameter. The third thing we need is the base URL. And the last parameter into our constructor was the container name.
Cool. So we'll just check the order of those parameters too, Kim, just in case they're slightly out.
They should have been commas in there. Okay. I promise I've developed before. Okay. So account name, account key, base URL, container. Let's just check. Account name, account key, base URL, container.
Beautiful. Awesome. So you should be able to run your local copy now if all that works perfectly, because of the brilliant coder that you are, Kim. Sure. Then we should see our image uploaded to that Azure storage account that we created, and in particular that container. So why don't we do that?
Why are we doing that? Do you want to, Ken, I'm just having a look at the comments here. Ken likes my block typing. It's super cool.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. What's the keyboard shortcut you're using for that, Kim?
It's hold down Alt and you just drag.
Cool.
All right. All right. So
what about the question? I expect is JSON for secrets only for development, but what about moving to production? Yeah, absolutely. We'll show you that soon.
Yeah, coming soon. All right. I'm going to log in. I'm going to go and add in another property. Right. So I'll log in here. And what we're expecting to see here. What we're expecting to see here is, you can see my house here. It's great. We'll go and create another property. We'll make this Glenn's house. Awesome house. All right, you need broadband. I hit save here. And then we'll go and edit it. And we're going to upload an image for this one, but this time we're expecting it to use our Azure storage. Let's see what happens.
Cool. I can feel the tension rising here.
I can tell you my tension's rising. All right, and so I hit save here. Now what I want to have a look at then, Glenn's house, beautiful, lovely house, Glenn. Couple of things, right? First of all, we should be able to open that image in a new tab, for example, and if we go and have a look at that URL, hey, look at that. It's actually in our blob storage under house images, and there's our name. And that also means we should be able to use our storage explorer. If I come back to a storage explorer here, we're already looking at the right containers here.
Hit refresh. Yeah.
And there we go. We've got a new house image that's just been added in.
That's a confetti moment, Kim. That's amazing.
Confetti moment. I love a confetti moment, Glenn.
Good. there's another question by Anonymous I just want to answer as well. If there are account keys to be used, so it's not anonymous, correct? What is the difference between account key and shared access signatures? Can we provide access with shared access signatures instead of an account key? Yes, you can. It's a little bit more involved to get that working, but it's completely worthwhile. So you can structure Azure storage in ways of giving direct access via account keys. It's probably beyond the scope of what we're discussing, but there's some plenty of good examples on how that's done. In particular, there's an app. It's actually a mobile app called by Piers. I can't remember Piers's last name off the top of my head.
I want to say Brosnan, but I know it's not.
Yeah, I know it's not Brosnan. I'm mentally thinking Brosnan as well. It's called Moments, and he has a good example of not only using the shared access signatures, but also the appropriate API to call in order to facilitate that. We might, hopefully, Rob can dig that app up. It's out of production, but I don't think it's maintained anymore, but the concepts for that hold true still to what you're asking for.
Yeah, fantastic. And we've also got one other question here as well from Desiree. Could we also upload the image for the Azure portal? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'll quickly show you where that is because I'm here, right? So we're going to the Azure portal, we're going to our containers, go into house images, and you actually like, you know, hit the button here. You can do an upload and upload a blob here and select a file and whether you override it or not. So you can certainly do that. Yeah. You can also, you know, do a little bit of management here as well. And you know, that's fine, particularly if you're just doing a few files. I find that the Storage Explorer is a little bit better if you're moving lots of files around. Yeah.
Very true. Cool. And yeah, Storage Explorer is available on all the operating systems too, for the Mac OS X as well as Linux.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Glenn, I think we're at the stage now where, you know, we've got our website, right? And our website is, we had the local version that we're running and it was uploading to file storage, but we actually want to go and change our actual production one isn't uploading to file storage. It's still using the old class. So what do we do?
Well, what do we do? Well, we need to make sure the configuration is right on the project before we actually upload it. So remember, we've got continuous integration happening now, Kim. So if we check these changes in, that's going to start a build process that updates the website for us. So before we do that, we need to set the configuration values. So when the new version is uploaded, it's all set and ready to go.
So basically now, these settings here that we were talking about, or you know, more accurately, the things that we had in secrets.json. Yeah,
that's right. So instead for production, what we need to do is to go into the app settings for the app service and then provide those same four values. And it'll essentially read from those values. ASP.NET Core has a nice way of using the appropriate level of configuration that's been set.
All right. So I'm gonna make this a little bit bigger, and then I'm going to navigate to what's to our app service, right? It's a setting in our app service. Under configuration, I think.
Yes.
And so what's cool about this, I suppose, is we're not baking that into our code, right? Which means that we can actually come in here and these will be application settings. So we're going to add in, well, we're going to add in four application settings, right? The same four that we had before. So
yeah, that's it really.
Yeah. So we'll go and throw these in. So I'm just copying these exactly out of that secrets.json that we had before.
Yeah, regardless of the kind of developer you are, sometimes you just have to copy and paste.
Yeah, that's right. grab this value here.
So Aaron has a question. What about on-premises access to the storage endpoint? Well, the storage endpoint is just a REST API. So if you can get to that URL, you can get access to the storage contents. You may have to code things or use the Storage Explorer. Either should be fine.
Beautiful. And one more setting, which is our blob container name. So what that's allowing us to do then is we can do stuff locally, right, on our local instance, but also once we deploy it up here, it's going to use those same settings. So fantastic. All right, the important button, never to forget, the save. So many times I've not clicked the save. Okay, so it's going to restart our application. Let's hit continue. Okay, we may actually have to restart it. Oh no, we're going to deploy our code now, right?
Yeah, that's right, Kim. And so, our code will be deployed and we use those new values that you've just set.
Yeah. So the beauty of this, Glenn, is we set up continuous integration before, or continuous deployment, I should say. So if I actually come in here, have a look at my Team Explorer, I'm doing a commit here into GitHub. So we changed out, we added this class in, we've adjusted our project because we added a file and we adjusted our startup. So use Azure Blob Storage. And I'll commit that. I mean, if I was really cool, Glenn, I'd do that from the command line. But
you don't need to be doing it from the command line to be cool, Kim. You just find the way you are.
All right. So that's committing it to GitHub. And if everything is fine, that will actually kick off deployment. So if I come back, if I can find my portal here, go to my deployment center.
Ah, oh, we've missed you, Deployment Center. It's only been a session. We should say active, right? Still deploying? Oh, still running. Nice.
There it is. It's found the change. It'll only take a moment. And so what that means is, you know, like it's not reliant on my development environment. So it was a good thing that we set that up. Should take just a moment. Any questions in the chat window while we're waiting for that?
Okay, Desiree has a question. Does availability set apply to Azure Storage, or is it the set only applicable to the virtual machine?
I want to say just to the virtual machine.
Yeah, I tend to think so as well.
Yeah.
Because the storage is its own service by itself. But yeah, I would think the availability sets are only for the virtual machines.
Yep. All right, we're done here, Glenn.
Cool.
We should be good. So I'm going to give this a refresh, just because it now needs to take on those new values. It probably did a refresh. Probably did a restart anyway. We'll find out. So if I come in here, we're in the quote Azure one. I'll log in, I'll add a property in, and we'll see if it goes to the right place.
So we're doing Rob's house now.
Rob's house? Okay, Rob's house. awesome. I hate making up test data. We'll make it a little bit more expensive than that.
So Anonymous has another question. Is there another way to store the secret key if app service and storage in the same subscription? Can we not use Azure Key Vault? And the answer is yes, you could. It's a little bit more work. We're really just trying to demonstrate the concepts of Azure Storage at the moment. But yes, Azure Key Vault is ideal and what I would wholeheartedly recommend.
Beautiful. All right, so I'm going to upload an image here. That's looking good. Let's save that. And now if we open that image in a new tab, look at that, Glenn.
Nice.
Look at that. It's actually gone and put it into our storage account. And of course, if we come back and have a look at storage account and give a refresh, we should now have another item in there. Beautiful. So it's just generating GUIDs at the moment for these uploads. Fantastic. All right. So I think Glenn, if I'm not mistaken, we've achieved our goals.
Yeah, that's confetti right there.
It's confetti.
My timing's off today.
Yeah, and my confetti button isn't working anymore. So look, let's wrap this up a little bit. Let's have a look at what we did in today's session. The first thing we did, we had a look at the benefits of using Azure Storage. We saw that had some definite improvements inside of there. What else did we do, Glenn?
We selected Blob Storage as the centralized and scalable and independent storage option for our project's needs and for the image assets. We then set up a storage account in the portal, compared Blob Storage to the file storage with containers being like folders. We also did some code as well, which I know you liked, Kim. We were able to use the appropriate NuGet package to communicate with the Blob portion of the Azure Storage REST API. We implemented a class that allowed us to have a drop-in replacement for our local file storage as well. So it was nice to have a little field trip to the world of ASP.NET's configuration system using things like the Manage User Secrets and also the configuration on the Azure portal. And that helps us to keep our configuration values safe. I think it was Anonymous that made the point before, Key Vault is also another really good Azure service. I highly encourage you to check that out if you've got a moment. There's some really good learn modules on that content as well.
Yeah. Speaking of learn modules, Glenn.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's a couple of good ones that you might want to go and check out. So that's going to be over at the learn site. Storing data in Azure. So that goes through a bunch of different options for storing data. It's a learning path, so it's got 5 modules, so there's about 4 hours of training in there, and Architect Storage Infrastructure in Azure as well. So they're really, really good places to go and delve a little bit deeper into this, because we have, you know, we kind of just scratched the surface, really, haven't we, of storage?
Yeah, that's true.
Cool. Right. Let's have a look at some questions. If you've got any questions, now's a good time to post those in. Aaron says, are you using Azure DevOps for CI/CD? Does deployment center support other CI/CD tools? So we covered that in our previous session. Maybe if we've got a link, or one of the moderators has a link to previous sessions, we can post those out. But what we're using is deployment center, and that'll allow you to, it's not quite like Azure DevOps, but what it does allow us to do is set up deployment from different places. It's a nice system called Kudu, and in our case, we hooked it up to GitHub, and you can see there it's Kudu, and it builds. But you know, you can use it to get things from you know, zip files and deploy from zip files or GitHub or Git or a number of different places.
Yeah, I think there was Azure DevOps and GitHub Actions were the other options
that's right.
that you could use.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Aaron says, do I have a sample GitHub? Absolutely. So you'll find all the code for this. Let me just find you a link down the bottom here, aka.ms/vanarstorrepo. And if you go there, you'll find all the source for this as well. So if we go into our starter, or there's the completed solution. So that's the source for that project. The other good place to have a look at inside of here, if you go and have a look in the README, there's, I just realized that I'm actually not showing you the window. I should do that. So in the GitHub repo, there's the series overview. Okay, and so if you click on this here, it will also go through all the steps for setting this up for each of the different sessions. And also the additional links that we referenced throughout here as well. Okay.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Any other questions? Here's one. When storage is replicated through Azure, does a web app use the closest storage all the time?
Well, I think actually that comes back to the previous question. Someone made a comment about CDNs earlier in the session, if you remember. So blob storage is set at the location that you define when you create the blob storage. But if you're using CDNs, you can actually use that to replicate and around that. But yeah, have a look at the CDN options. Again, there's some good content on the documentation and learn site about how to configure that. But yes, absolutely, the CDN would give you the most ideal storage location, closest to where your customers are, especially if you've got a very geographically dispersed customer base.
Yeah, fantastic. It's CDNs are awesome with things like blob storage. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Now, speaking of you know, different sessions and setting up for different sessions, it brings us to the end of this session. So I want to thank everyone for joining us, and of course for you, Glenn, as well. There is some links here. So we mentioned the VanArsdale repo. We always really appreciate it if you give us some feedback on the session. So there is a link here. Hopefully Rob and Matt can post that into the chat window so people can access it a little bit easier. But please take a survey. Tell us what you think. You know, give us some feedback, what we can improve on, what we did awesome. And if you've got any other questions about the broader Microsoft Learn Live, feel free to reach out to ms@usdev@microsoft.com. So with that, Glenn, I think we're going to sign off. Do remember we have a session, for me it's next Wednesday, I think it's probably Tuesday in the US, where we're going to sort of finish off this series and talk about monitoring and scaling. Super important.
Cool. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Kim. Thanks, Robin and Matt, for moderating as well. Thanks to everyone for coming, and we'll hope to see you on that fifth and final session in our series.
And thanks, everyone, for all the great questions as well. All right. So take care, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.